Welcome to Highly Sensitive Money. I'm your host, Diana Giselle Yanez, and if you're tired of constantly feeling like you're stuck in a cycle of never having enough, always chasing after more but never finding satisfaction, then this episode is for you. Today, we're diving deep into our relationship with money, exploring the concept of enoughness and the relentless pursuit of more. Drawing from personal experience and insights from psychology, I'll reflect on societal pressures and the importance of finding peace and gratitude in what we already have. Today, I'm here to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is enough. It's such a complicated topic because it's something that I'm still grappling with. Honestly, it's something that I want to write a book on. And this like little exploration of it is really me verbally processing. What do I know about enough? How does it make sense? How do you heal the scarcity wound? We can work on healing a wound internally, and often in the wound is the medicine. So the scarcity wound that we may have, whatever it is that you're like, this thing always trips me up. I always want more of it. For me, it was definitely food for a long time. And then it also became like attention and different things that I have at different points given my power over to. But we also have to remember the context in which we're in. We're in a society that does not value satiation. We're in a very consumerist society, like planned obsolescence, like planning to have phones not work after a while, planning to have furniture fall apart. Like that is literally part of the business plan. And we are consuming that. If you are exposed to the media at all, you're constantly being told, like, here are things that you need. Here are things that will make you happy. I understand that, right? Buddhism reminds us that we move towards pleasure. We move away from pain. So it makes sense that as a society, as like a social complex being, we're constantly trying to bring pleasures into our lives or status or things that'll get us there, which is why there's an invitation to just abandon the idea that there's a there to get to. There's no there there, right? And that's actually a sign of freedom. That's a sign of choice. That's a sign of saying like, oh, given that I'll never be able to be fully satisfied, what is the thing that I'm being called to do in this moment? Given that life is so complex and continuously changing, what are the trade-offs that make sense for my life? That's a really key question. What are the trade-offs that make sense for my life? I had a dear friend who said that there was no amount of money that could give her a sense of security because she could always imagine a problem greater than that amount of money. So how are you ever going to feel satiated? If I say yes to buying a house, I'm saying no to a lot of other things. And can you be okay with that? We often think that more money means that at some point there won't be any trade-offs, but it's not true. Trade-offs are like, again, going back to what my friend had said earlier, doesn't matter how much money you have, that you can't imagine a catastrophe bigger than that amount of money. I also remember one of my first college classes, our professor, it was an economics class, I believe, said that people want 25% more than what they have. And he made a joke. He said, imagine what Bill Gates must feel like. He wants 25% more of what he has. And at the time, Bill Gates was the richest man on the world. And at some point, it's no longer about wanting more money. Maybe it's about wanting more impact, right? He was already Bill Gates, but like if he wanted 25% more impact, what was he going to do? The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, you know, given that wanting is part of the operating system of being human, how do we relax with it? How do we not take it so seriously? How do we just enjoy the wanting and be like, oh, I want more. Okay, let me go do something else. Like that is honestly what integration can often look like. There's this peacefulness and subtlety that can come through. As I've shared in other episodes, I struggled with disordered eating when I was younger, and I come from a family that has a history of addiction. So for me to know what enough is, it's been a lot of work. It's been a lot of inquiry. What I do with my work as a money coach is really just to teach what is it to have enough, because capitalism teaches us that it's not possible, that if you have enough, it's because you're not striving enough, because you're being mediocre. It just teaches us an always grasping. We also have to remember that like Buddhism also talks about how life is suffering. We're always running towards pleasure and fleeing pain. And having enough is kind of like being like, oh, you know what? The pleasure and the pain and the suffering is part of the experience. What does that all have to do with money? A lot of the times we think it's not possible to have enough money. We think it's not possible to have enough of anything, right? We live in a society that's so bent on consumption. And money is like a leading cause of mental health issues. And I think that not knowing how to savor, not knowing how to slow down, how to have gratitude is part of our problem. If we knew how to do that more, if we gave ourselves permission to be in the moment and enjoy what we have more, we wouldn't feel this pressure of always gaining, of always consuming. So what does the scarcity wound look like? What does it look like to be stuck in that rut of never having enough? One of the main ways that I see it is that the goalpost keeps moving. Something that used to, that you were like, I cannot wait until I have, I don't know, until I'm debt free, keeping that with a theme of money. And then you are debt free and you're like, oh, now I can't wait for me to invest this much money, or I can't wait for this other thing, right? The goalpost keeps moving and we often don't stop to celebrate our achievements. We don't stop to say like, well, this issue, this thing that used to be super stressful no longer is. And I've shared, and I, again, as someone who grew up in a family affected by addiction and who myself have experienced addiction very firsthand, enough always felt, it felt impossible. You know, if a little was good, more was better is often the way that I thought. And I see this so much in the way that we do money. Like it's almost impossible for anyone to think of enough money, right? And the thing with satiation is that it's a moment by moment experience. What we need in each moment shifts. And we often ask money to do things that money can't do. If you, for example, are going through a really difficult time and you either because you're grieving, because there was a job layoff, because of ongoing war in the world, you might want to like help your children feel better by distracting them with purchases, by distracting them with experiences, by distracting them, by running away from the painful experience. And what in fact they might need is to know that you're there for them, right? The need might be different. And sometimes, and we definitely do need to have joy and pleasure, but joy and pleasure are not the only things that we need. I believe that our society's disconnection from nature and from our inner world makes it so that we're always longing for something. And at the same time, it could be that part of the human experience is that we are longing to return to wherever it was that we were before, or to go to wherever it is that we're going, or longing to understand why we're here, right? For some people, for myself, not for everybody. Not everybody wants to understand those kind of things. But for those of you who do, it can feel like endless questioning. As someone who at a very young age, I realized that external things were not going to fill the void within me. I was left wondering, well, what will? What can I do to feel good moment to moment? What can I do to get by moment to moment was also the question at some points. So enough was just a moving target. What is enough right now? And now. And now. When I was younger and my anxiety was much more dominant and I didn't know what relaxation really felt like, I remember a friend encouraged me to sing myself a mantra. I am enough. I have enough. I do enough. I am enough. I have enough. I do enough. Being socialized as a woman, always being asked to be perfect, both physically and in the way that I did things, coming from immigrant parents who were working so hard to provide a better life, and for me to prove that their move here, that their move to the US was a good call, it's a lot of pressure. And leaning into enough felt very countercultural, especially because I am very ambitious. Like there is a natural curiosity and inquisitiveness inside of me that always pushed me for more. And yet I am grateful that the more that I wanted was often not material. Like I knew that a nicer car or nicer clothes or nicer earrings were not the answer. Although for a long time, I did think that being thinner was the answer. That was a goalpost that I carried for many years. There's a book I read years ago called Scarcity, Why Having Too Little Means So Much. And there's a couple of key points that came from that book that I continue to share with people. The authors are both psychologists, and they say that when you grow up, when anyone grows up and has an experience of uncertainty or scarcity, right, of not having enough, this could be food, time, money, attention, love, our relationship to those things can become really scattered. It can become really destructive. And people will often respond in two extremes. Either as soon as they have it, they use it all up. Right? As soon as you get a dollar, you spend it, or they never use it. They go to the other extreme of hoarding. And I joke that sometimes this looks like people either have diarrhea, like they can't get the nutrition they need from it, it just flows through them, or they're constipated. They're not in right flow. And these are very crass ways to think about it, but it makes sense in our mind. So what does it look like to have right flow with money, with resources, with work, with attention, with time, with love? Because honestly, we can't talk about enough money if we don't know what enough looks like in other areas of our life. Never enough can sometimes look like a toxic desire for achievement, a toxic desire for outside validation. Again, we've got to compare this to a more inner drive or inner love version of doing something for the love of it, doing something as an end in itself, or being with people as an end in themselves, not asking them to provide anything else for us, not using others as a means, but instead as an end in themselves. There's nothing that they have to do. It definitely makes me think of like the hungry ghost that they talk about in Buddhism, right? There's these spirits with these distended bellies that are constantly grasping and grasping and grasping. In a lot of life, we look like that. We're constantly running towards pleasure, running away from pain, trying to create a fictional environment of peace, which given just life on life's terms is not really a thing that happens. And I'm not saying that to be depressive, yet there's a relaxation that happens. One of my favorite teachers is Pema Chodron. And in one of her books, she says, abandon all hopes of fruition. What does that mean? It means to let go of thinking it's ever going to work. It means to let go that it's ever going to be peaceful, that your life will be picture perfect. Even if you have the white picket fence, there's all the other things that come with it. It means to relax into your life as it is. And what we end up learning when we relax more and more into life on life's terms is that it's workable. I'm reading a beautiful book called Already Free by Bruce Tiff. He talks a lot about when we're running from an experience, when we're trying to fix an experience, we're rejecting the experience, and that actually gives it more power. When you're in the scarcity wound, when your friend says, I just took this vacation, and you're like, how did that person take that vacation? I'm already in debt. How could I ever afford that? I'm never going to be able to get there. You see how the thoughts start running one after the other? The invitation is to pause. It's often really helpful to look behind you. Look at the exits. Look outside. Look at something in your space that's beautiful, that's grounding. And to bring yourself back into your body. To bring yourself back into the present moment. And to say, what's happening? To not run from the desire of having what your friend has, whatever the vacation is. And to not run from the fear of not being able to get there. But to be with it, be like, oh, this is part of the experience. It's a lot of the time, it's an invitation to slow down, to add a little bit of pause between our emotions and our actions. Not because either of them is bad, but just so that you can see if they're right actions, right emotions, right words for you, for who you are now. The developmental approach to therapy says that a lot of the times we're unconscious, we're just running on habits. And when it comes to money, that is so very much the case. Working with clients on changing their money behaviors takes a while because we're doing behavioral modification, behavioral coaching. And there's different tips that I have on how to make that possible, and I'll share that in a different episode. But here we're really talking about, like, what does enough feel like, and why do I believe that is a worthy goal? That is a state to strive towards, that is something for us to give ourselves permission for. We often, again, in a society that's so hell-bent on growth, and the United States definitely is, right? We're always about competing, about being number one. What if you step outside of that competition? Collaboration is also a way that nature works within itself. When you look at ecosystems, yes, there is competition, but it's not only competition. It's also collaboration. It's also mutuality and reciprocity. I remember in Braiding Sweetgrass, the author Robin Wall Kimmerer, she's talking about these flowers that are a beautiful yellow and purple. And she wants to do research on, like, why is nature so beautiful? Which is not like something that an ethnobiologist can study. That's not like legitimate research. That was her experience at the time when she was doing her graduate work. So instead she has like some other long convoluted reason of why she's studying that. But in reality, what it turns out she learns, what she finds, is that the juxtaposition of this very bright yellow and this very bright purple makes it easy for pollinators to find them. It's a relationship. Like, the beauty and contrast of nature makes it easy for pollinators to come and feed themselves and to also spread the seeds of those flowers. That reciprocity is beautiful, and it also is them being themselves, the pollinator going towards what's most natural, and the flower evolving in such a way that it finds what's most natural. It all works together. And maybe one of my favorite teachers, another favorite teacher, is Tara Brach, and she often talks about the evolutionary cycle that we may in. Maybe the constant striving we've been going through with colonialism and capitalism in the past 500 years was an evolutionary stage, and a place that we're called to move forward now into is enoughness, satiation. Again, it's a call back to reciprocity, a call back to seeing how our well-being is interconnected and interdependent. So what do you do when you're in the middle of the scarcity wound? Let me come back to this question. Look around, come back into your body, pause and see what is the need that's actually being expressed. So how do we learn to identify enoughness in our body? And again, why is it a goal? Because when you feel like you have enough, when you know how to feel satiated, it'll be easy. It'll relax your nervous system. When I learned how to eat dessert in a way that didn't make me sick, the world suddenly became a friendlier place for me to eat dessert in. I just was like, there was one less thing for me to be intimidated by or afraid of. When I learned to say no to behaviors and activities that weren't good for me, I said yes to so much more well-being. And the only way for me to get to those places was to accept the reality of what worked for me. And also always acknowledging that that's a moving target. What works for me now is not what worked for me 5 years ago or what may work for me in 5 years. We're constantly evolving. So becoming whole is not the same as becoming perfect. Perfection is not really a worthy goal, because it kind of sets us up for failure. Perfection has a lot to do with, like, white supremacy, showing up in the right way. Instead, let's move towards wholeness. Let's move towards integration and towards additional complexity in the way that we do life and being more nuanced in our movements. When you feel the scarcity wound of grasping come on, I invite you to pause, look around you, come into your body and ask, what's going on in my body? What need is being expressed? What is trying to come into my awareness? Those are the ways through the scarcity wound. Just three little questions. Given that wanting is part of the operating system of being human, how do we relax with it? How do we not take it so seriously? How do we just enjoy the wanting and be like, oh, I want more? Okay, let me go do something else. Like, that is honestly what integration can often look like. There's this peacefulness and subtlety that can come through. I love this question that was shared with me by Rose Fierick, who was interviewed on this first season of Highly Sensitive Money. And she says, what are the conditions under which you thrive? What are the things that are needed in your life for you to thrive? And how do you define thriving? That is such a beautiful, beautiful journaling exercise of just asking that over and over. What are the conditions under which I thrive? And you'll find that things are probably much simpler than you expect. We need plenty of sleep. We need contact nutrition, which is hugs and love from people that we care for. We need community. We need to know that our life has meaning and purpose. We need to know that the world is better because we're in it. Or at least I'm describing my own needs. I can only speak for my own. Like, what is it that I need? And it's a question that has a day-to-day different answer. Enough is a full embodied experience. There isn't actually a number. There isn't an ingredient list, a checklist that is enough. It's an ongoing experience of like, what do I need right now? And what is it that I really need right now? Because you might say, I need a vacation. Maybe what you actually need is to take a 5-minute walk. And what you actually need is to tell your boss that you're not going to meet a deadline. And what you actually need is to consider getting a different job. Like, just keep finding, what is the need? What is the need? What is the true need? Because I promise it's probably not something that you're going to find at a mall. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. As I shared, I am working on What is Enough? That's a topic of a book that I would love to write in the next couple of years. And this is a verbal exploration of enoughness and the different aspects of it. Gracias. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Diana Giselle Yáñez. Did you enjoy this episode? Please share this first season of Highly Sensitive Money with others. To learn how you can upskill your money relationship, join the newsletter over at allthecolors.net. That's allthecolors.net for network. Take care, and remember, you've got what it takes to feel good about your money.